We are in the book of Judges today, and I want us to start all over again in chapter 4, verse number 1, even though we did a little bit of an introduction to this yesterday as we were closing. You know the cycle. Israel falls into sin. God then puts them under subjugation of some foreign power. They are sorry about that, and great sorrow is expressed for a while. And then eventually they get around to supplicating God for a new savior, that is, a new judge. And so that's all that's happened for several different cycles now in the history of Israel. In fact, as we begin today, I believe we are looking at the year 1247 BC through 1228 BC being the 20 years that Israel is underneath Canaanite oppression, particularly up in the north. So if you have a map, that would be helpful today as we begin. Google Earth is something that I've been using so that I can see the terrain as well, as being there in person and having seen some of these places up close and personal. So chapter number 4 says, "And the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of He who is after Ehud died." So Ehud was the last judge. He had 80 years of leadership after he saved them from the Moabites. Then he dies. And the sin that's always there just below the surface boils up again and comes out in the open almost immediately after Ehud is gone. And verse 2, "He who is sold them into the hand of Yabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor." Now, Hazor is a massive city that was located about, I think it's less than 10 miles north of the north shore of the Sea of Galilee. It's about 8 or 9 miles, something like that. And it was burned by Joshua, destroyed and burned, its king executed. But now here we are, about 150 years later, and there is a new king that's rebuilt it and is ruling from a palace there inside what's supposed to be Israeli territory. And he has a commander of a chariot force that is working with him. He's mentioned next in the text. It says the commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. Now that's down to the south of Megiddo, about 10 miles or so. Megiddo is on the north end of a pass that comes from the flatlands by the Mediterranean shoreline, south and west of the ridgeline that we know of as Mount Carmel. So Megiddo was the outlet of this pass, and Harosheth Hagoyim seems to be down close to the entry point into that pass and a couple of other passes that feed northward into the Plain of Megiddo, and what we also know as the Jezreel Valley. And the Jezreel Valley goes all the way down to the Jordan River near the big fortress city of Beth Sha'an, which is just south, a few miles of the south end of the Sea of Galilee. So what we have here is we have a Canaanite king up in the north who has a commander of chariot forces that is able to bring and project the power of this king all the way down to the Mediterranean coast, south of Mount Carmel, and all through the plain of Megiddo and the valley of Jezreel, up and down part, at least part, of the Jordan Valley, and then around the Sea of Galilee, and then northward, along that plain that's next to the upper Jordan River and the waters of Merom, which would be the Hull swampland area, probably clear up to the entrance of Hamat, which is north of Dan just a little ways. So Hazor, Yabin, the king of Hazor, has control of a huge portion of the croplands that's supposed to be Israeli controlled. And he's doing it by a chariot force, a massive chariot force. Verse number 3, then the people of Israel cried out to He Who Is for help, for he, meaning Sisera, under Yabin, had 900 chariots of iron, and he oppressed the people of Israel cruelly for 20 years. Interestingly enough, the site that we think, and I definitely think this to be the case, the site that we think that is Harosheth Hagoyim, south of Megiddo, south and west of Megiddo, has an archaeological find of the linchpin, the connecting pin of a chariot wheel of a well-to-do person. That's one of the archaeological things that they found right from this time period. So that seems to match everything about this passage. And Israel suffers horribly during this time period. We'll get a sense of that in a moment when we start reading through a poem. Now, verse 4. Deborah, which is the Hebrew way of talking about a honeybee. Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidot, was judging Israel at that time. So Israel has gotten to this point where there is not any decent male leadership in the area of spiritual matters. See, they're supposed to have a high priest and Levites that are scattered all over the 12-tribe region. They're supposed to be keeping Israel up on God's word, but that's not happening. And so we have here a woman that God has raised up, because her heart is open to that, to be a spiritual leader to the people in the core of the Israeli territory. And she, verse 5 says, she used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim, and the people of Israel came up to her for judgment. So she lives south of Shiloh, where the tabernacle is located. But people are not going to the tabernacle to talk to the high priest and ask the high priest or Levites what they think they should do for God. They're going to this woman, because she is actually tapped into God, while the spiritual, supposed to be leaders, are not tapped in with God. That's really, really sad that Israel has come to this point. Now, this is the period of the judges, and you know the theme point of the period of the judges. There was no king in Israel in those days, and every man did as he saw fit in his own eyes. And I always like to put the commentary, and that's not good. All right, so she is trying to keep the people on track as much as she can. And verse number 6, she sent, and this is at God's command, no doubt, and summoned Barak, the son of Abinoam, from Kedesh Naphtali. Now, Kedesh Naphtali is just a few miles north of Hazor. So this guy is clearly a leader in the tribe of Naphtali, and probably in all of the tribes that are in the north part of the Promised Land. And he's not doing anything about Yabin. He's not taking care of the trouble that Yabin, the king of Hazor, is causing. So she summons Barak and says to him, has not He Who Is, the God of Israel, commanded you? Go, gather your men around Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Yabin's army to meet you by the river Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand. So she sends a message to the person who should be the leader of the Israeli army in the north, Barak. And yes, that's the exact same name of our past president, Barak. It's a shared name in the Middle Eastern language groups. So he's supposed to be taking care of business. God may have already contacted him in some other fashion. And now the prophet Deborah lets him know this is the plan of action you're supposed to take. You're supposed to grab 10,000 people from the north, go down past the Sea of Galilee to the Mount Tabor, which is a very prominent mountain that sits near the Sea of Galilee. It's not very far from where Nazareth is at. In fact, when we visited this last time and we were up on an overlook south of Nazareth, you can very clearly see Mount Tabor. It's a major landmark. So they're supposed to gather there, and from there they're to sweep down into the plain of Megiddo, which is going to be west of the valley of Jezreel, the city of Jezreel, and take on the chariot forces there, just to the north and east of Megiddo. That's the plan. That's God's command. Now, Barak is not so sure he wants to do this. So he responds. He said to her, "If you will go with me, I'll go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go." So he tells her, "Unless you come up here to the north and you put your life on the line too, I'm not going to do it." So, verse number 9, she said back, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for he who is will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." So she makes a prophecy as a prophet, says, because you won't do what God wants you to do, just because he's told you to do so, you're not going to get the glory of beating Sisera. That's going to go to another woman, because you won't go to battle unless this woman is with you. So Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. So they go back to his hometown just north of Hazor. And Barak called out Zebulun and Naphtali to Kadesh, and 10,000 went up at his heels, and Deborah went up with him. So they gather the troops, and they make their way past Hazor, which is where they'll come back to eventually, and down to Mount Tabor, just like Deborah said God wanted. Now we have to bring somebody else into the story here. Verse 11 says, "Now Heber the Kenite had separated from the Kenites the descendants of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, and had pitched his tent as far away as the oak of Za'anaim, which is near Kadesh." Now, you remember that Moses was married to a Midianite woman. And his father-in-law, we've seen him have several names now, Jethro, Reuel seems to be his title, the shepherd of God or the friend of God. But here we have Hobab being mentioned as a name as well. Hobab has to do with being cherished or loved, and so it might have been a nickname that he had. But anyway, his descendants, some of them, had followed the Israelites into the Promised Land. Most of them seem to have settled down in the south as Bedouin shepherds. That is, they moved around in tents within the tribal regions to the south. But this particular line, the Heber line moved to the north. And so they've been living the Bedouin lifestyle up near the waters of Merom in this plain area north of the Sea of Galilee. That will be important later. Verse 12. When Sisera was told that Barak, the son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor, he called out all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the men who were with him from Harosheth Hagoyim to the river Kishon. Now, the river of Kishon drains out of the hill country to the south of Megiddo and Taanach, and it drains westward and northwestward until it empties into the Mediterranean Sea just north of the big bump of Mount Carmel that sticks out into the Med. So this is a this is kind of a boundary that when you come out of come out of the passes like the Megiddo Pass or the Taanach Pass, then you have to cross this river in order to get into the plain of Megiddo, into the valley of Jezreel. So Barak is coming from the north, and Sisera is coming from the south. And they're going to meet out in the middle of the plains of Megiddo, just a few miles to the north and east of Megiddo. Verse 14, Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day in which he who is has given Sisera into your hand. Does not he who is go out before you?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And he who is routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot. Now we'll come back to how God miraculously routed this chariot army in a little bit. Because under normal circumstances, 10,000 foot soldiers should have been cleared from the field of battle by 900 iron chariots. When you've got a rapid transport weapons platform going against foot soldiers, the rapid weapons platform should win, especially in flat land, such as this territory is. But God gums up the works on behalf of the Israelis, and we'll talk about that later. But Barak loses his chariot. He jumps out of it, and he runs away. Now, where's he going? He's heading north. He's heading for Hazor to get reinforcements, first security from the walled city of Hazor, and then also reinforcements in order to deal with this. So Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth Hagoyim. So that's heading south. So the chariot forces, they try to go away to the south, back to their base, about 10 miles away from Megiddo. And all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not a man was left. So the 900 chariots plus all the forces that would have been associated with them, they're all dead. The only one that's still alive is Sisera, because he's going the opposite direction. He's running away past Mount Tabor, past shores of the Sea of Galilee, and then up the Jordan Valley, the upper Jordan Valley, heading for the safety, he thinks, of Hazor. Verse 17, but Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Yael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite. Now, remember, we met him earlier. We met Heber earlier because he is a distant relative of Moses' family. And he's a Bedouin. He's a non-Israeli, but he's of apparently the faith of the Israelis. And he's a Bedouin that moves his tent all around this plain that surrounds the Upper Jordan Valley. And in this particular case, the tent encampment must have been a little bit to the south of that area, down closer to the Sea of Galilee. And Ya'il is going to be the one that meets with Sisera. So let's see, where'd we drop off here? Verse 17 again. Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Ya'il, the wife of Heber the Kenite, for there was peace between Yabin, the king of Hazor, and the house of Heber the Kenite, meaning that there was an agreement that he could keep up his Bedouin lifestyle moving around near the city of Hazor. Ya'el came to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, don't be afraid." So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with a rug. So he's exhausted and sweaty. He's been running, jogging, dragging himself along for tens of miles to get away from the field of battle. And he comes to this tent encampment, and she tells him, "Come on in, and everything will be okay." Of course, God's already given her a different assignment than that. Verse 19, he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I'm thirsty." Now, that doesn't surprise you. Whatever served as his canteen probably ran out quite some time ago. He's been at this flight for hours. So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. They used animal skins as bottles, as containers for liquid, like goat's milk. Verse 20, and he said to her, "Stand at the opening of the tent. If any man comes and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' you say no." So he wants to try to get some rest to recuperate so he can make that last burst of several miles to Hazor. And he wants her to stand guard and not let anyone find him. Verse 21, but Ya'el, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg, took a hammer in her hand. Then she went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast from weariness, and so he died. So just like Deborah prophesied, a woman was going to be the defeater of Sisera, the commander of the 900-strong chariot force of Yabin, the king of Hazor. Ya'el, a woman, a non-combatant, was going to end the oppression of the Canaanite peoples over the Israelis. And so she becomes the hero of this story, and a song will be composed about him. Behold, as Barak was pursuing Sisera, so they figured out that Sisera was not among the dead that they killed on the retreat southward toward Harosheth Hagoyim. So they come back to where the battle was, and they start tracking this guy northward. And they track him right to this tent. Behold, Barak was pursuing Sisera. Ya'el went out to meet him and said to him, "Come, I will show you the man whom you are seeking." So he went into her, and there lay Sisera dead with the tent peg in his temple. And that must have come as a huge shock to Barak, that just like Deborah told him, a woman, and we don't know how old this woman was. There's no indication as to whether or not she's a young woman or an old woman. All we know is that she was a woman and therefore a non-combatant. But it must have shocked this battle-hardened Barak that she nailed this guy to the ground with a tent peg and hammer. Verse 23, so on that day, God subdued Yabin, king of Canaan, before the people of Israel. And the hand of the people of Israel pressed harder and harder against Yabin, the king of Canaan, until they destroyed Yabin, king of Canaan. So this was just the first of several battles. And Barak would have led in the rest of them till they have finally dislodged the Canaanites out of Hazor and killed the king, Yabin. And eventually, Hazor becomes an Israeli fortified city. And Solomon even does a lot of architectural work there. Well, have a great weekend. Come back on Monday. We'll finish this story.